Title of the message is, How Many Loaves Do We Have? And I'm reading from Mark 8, 1 through 21. I'm not going to read quite that far. Probably only 12.
Read and stop where you want to.
Okay. During those days, another crowd gathered. Since they had nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said, I have compassion for these people. They have already been with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. If I send them home hungry, they will collapse on the way because some of them have come a long distance. His disciples answered, But where in this remote place can anyone get enough of bread to feed them? How many loaves do you have? Jesus asked. 7. He told the crowd to sit on the ground, and when he had taken the 7 loaves and gave thanks, he broke them and gave them to his disciples and distributed it to the people. And they did so. They had a few small fish as well, and he gave thanks for them also and told the disciples to distribute them. The people ate and were satisfied. And afterward, the disciples picked up 7 baskets full of broken pieces that were left over. About 4,000 were present. After he had sent them away, he got into the boat with his disciples and went to the region of Dalmatia. The Pharisees came and began to question Jesus, to test him. And they asked him for a sign from heaven. He sighed deeply and said, Why does this generation ask for a sign? Truly I tell you, no sign will be given to it. Then he left them and got into the boat and crossed to the other side. On a trip together, a Hindu and a rabbi and a lawyer stopped at a farmhouse and asked to stay the night. There's space for 2, but one will have to sleep in the barn. I will go, the Hindu volunteered, and a few minutes later, the lawyer and the rabbi heard a knock. There is a cow in the barn, the Hindu said. A cow is sacred, and I cannot sleep with a sacred beast. No problem, I can do that, the rabbi said, grabbing his pillow. But in a few minutes later, the rabbi knocks. There is a pig in the barn. It's an unclean animal. My belief forbids me to be near such a creature. With a tired sigh, the lawyer headed out. And almost immediately, there was a third knock on the door, and it was the cow and the pig. No one seems to be able to get along, do they?
What did the cow and the pig say?
Moo and oink. I think the story I can't kind of depicts that we don't really get along with each other all that well. We think a lot differently, but yet we can't seem to get quite along together. This week is Thanksgiving week. We're eating turkey. We're not eating cow or pig, so we're eating turkey. I suppose some people have different things, different ways. And I think in our lives at a time that is somewhat or very complicated. We are very busy, and sometimes we overlook our blessings and we forget to be thankful for what we really have. Many in the world have very little in comparison to what we have. We are truly blessed in this nation, and I think sometimes we kind of overlook the fact and we grumble and complain. Yes, it comes as a cost. But I also think that many of us are thankful. I think many of us are thankful. We give thanks. And you really don't need to have a turkey and a big dinner and invite guests over to show your thankfulness. You can do it in various different ways. I think being thankful is about really being comfortable and understanding that you're content where you're at. Later in life, as I get older, I think Some things are not nearly as important as what they once were. My material goods are not nearly as important as they once were, although I do enjoy the technology. A lot of my material things I kind of don't worry too much about. But be that as may. The question I want to deal with this morning is, and this is going to be leading up to Advent, and somewhat I'm going to have a different question for that, is why did Jesus seem to kind of pick on the Pharisees somewhat? He always centered them out in some way. And why did the Pharisees want a sign or a miracle? They came to Jesus and they wanted a sign to show that Jesus was who he was. The Pharisees were a group of people. They were a lot of the leaders. They were they adhered to the law. They had an oral law that interpreted the law. And this is really the origin of the rabbis today. This is, from what I understand, is where they got their start. There was a whole lot of groups, much like the story that I shared this morning in the beginning. There wasn't just one class. There were Sadducees, there was Essenes, there was a lot of different groups at Jesus' time, much like there is today. There's a lot of different groups. And basically, they didn't always get along either, like we do today. We don't always get along today in various different ways. I would like to ask the question, and this is one of the questions I'm going to be dealing with in Advent, is if you were God or a God, how would you get a message to us earthlings? How would you go about doing that? Now, most of us probably believe that there's life hereafter, and I believe there's life before us who started. Obviously, we had parents, and there was life before us and life before them, and on back and on back. And as of last Sunday, I kind of believe that there was a life, you know, we all somewhat shared the story of creation. We maybe lived before. Some of us believe that we lived before, had previous lives. Even if you simply believe in evolution, well, you know, at some point in time, you have to realize that there's life after life after life. And so I believe if heaven exists, it already exists, and there's people there, and there's a heavenly realm, there's angels, there's a hierarchy. We are about a little speck of dirt in the middle of this great galaxy. Yes, this universe is really big in comparison to what? We say the universe is very big, but what do we have to compare it with? Ourselves. So yes, the universe is very big, but eternity and forever is a lot more. So the question I ask, how would you go about doing it? And what would it take for you to believe? If you were the Sadducees or the Pharisees or whatever, and you asked Jesus for a sign, what kind of sign would you want? And what would it take for you to believe? That's some of the things that I'm going to deal with in Advent season. That's why I'm going to kind of center around that. So does anyone want to share what would it take for them to believe? I mean, what would really like say, I believe, I'm done, you know? I mean,
I guess if there was only one loaf of bread and we all ate the bread until we were totally full and then there were baskets of bread left over, that would probably make me believe. Did it make them believe?
Well, the people believed that they ate, never filled, and you know that happened right before the Pharisees came to him, and they wanted their individual sign. It doesn't say whether or not they were in that group of people or not, but that's so you're not going to believe unless that something is multiplied in front of you.
I couldn't believe without that happening.
Anybody else want to share what they might take?
You know, when you pray, though, and that comes about, you've got to believe there's a God. You got to believe there's a term afterwards.
Yeah, you have to, don't you?
Yep.
Yeah.
I do a lot of praying.
Yeah.
I need
But you know, as time goes on, you as a human being, you tend to like, you know, kind of forget, or you kind of you reanalyze what happened, and you say, well, did that really happen or not? And it seems like human nature, we need to have a continual like manifestation of some sort. What? A validation of some sort. We're so doubtful all the time. In some ways, we kind of, you know, some people believe easier than others, and some people don't believe at all. I often wondered if Jesus came in our time now, how would the world react to a heavenly being coming here? Would they actually believe? I mean, how, you know, and miracles started happening. How would the world react today? Some believe, some didn't.
Unless you're actually there with him, and you couldn't be everywhere. But you're saying it's
not always easy. So if the people who were at this gathering, that the bread was multiplied and the fish were multiplied, and went out and told you that story, would you say, ah? See, we have a tendency, unless we're there and see it, we're not going to believe it.
Just think this is going on for centuries.
Yeah.
And people keep saying he's coming. A lot of people say, no, he's not, you know.
Well.
And it's hard to believe that all through life, nothing has happened, you know, for centuries, that he hasn't come back.
Yeah.
Expecting to come back today.
Could, yeah. Yes. And what would that look like?
I can't imagine.
I think there would be a lot of doubters. I think. So, so if you didn't actually see it physically, but you saw it mentally, spiritually, in your mind, would you actually believe it? Like a dream type of thing? I mean, it would have to be a physical manifestation in which you would be like, most of us, I think, or like Doubting Thomas. We would have to poke our fingers in the hole, and we would need evidence. I mean, I believe, but yet I say, Lord, help my unbelief, because there are times that I doubt. I have periods, and it's not like I don't doubt completely. I just struggle with my belief. I mean, to be honest with you, that's I mean, you asked me that question, Colin, and that's how I'm going to answer it. I have to be honest. I mean, am I enthused of, you know, I'm happy now to the peak all the time because I know there's a better life coming? I mean, no, I still have to drive my truck. I still have to work. I still have to do things. I still have to live this life. I have sore muscles. I ache. I have to deal with this life. And so, yes, I have my ups and downs for sure. But I can't never really say that I have no belief ever to the point where I say there's none. No, I struggle in my growth of belief, for sure.
Well, you don't want to go, you know. I mean, if somebody walks through the door and said they were Jesus, what would you get? You wouldn't.
Show me a sign. Well, yeah, I think this is only so, the Sadducees, the Pharisees were like, and what always got me about the Sadducees and the Jewish people, they had a history in their Torah, all the way back to Moses, and then some, you know, of all these things that happened supernatural to them, they had a whole history book full of it. But yet, here when it came to Jesus, they said, oh, well, I'm not really sure if you're the Messiah or not. You know, show me, prove me, all this and that. And
even then, it might be hard, because look at these magicians that are out there that can do. And
well. And there was a lot of messiahs who claimed to be messiahs at the time of Jesus. Yeah.
There was a continuation, much like we say, a lot of theology is talks about the return of Jesus. There's a lot of theology and different viewpoints on, you know, when Christ is going to return. You know, you talk about the rapture, the post, the pre, the this, all that kind of stuff. There's a whole array of thoughts of how Jesus is going to come back, or when he's going to come back, or if he's going to come back. I mean, he says he's going to come back. I mean, I'm like you, Dick. It's like, I live my life, and I'm not going to say for sure that Jesus is going to come back in my lifetime or not. I don't have to have Jesus come back in my life, my lifetime. I don't know what that would look like. But I know that I'm going to die and pass from this life onto another life. And is that Jesus returning for me? I think in some respects that's how I kind of hold Jesus' return, coming back. As we pass from this life to the next, Jesus is going to come back for each individual coming back. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how Jesus is going to return and what that would look like, and if he's going to return to this earth, or are we going to return back to him as we pass from this life to the next. So it's a very complicated, very deep subject. To some extent. So, again, how would we go about, how would you go about getting a message to Earth, us Earthlings, if you were living in a heavenly plane or an angel or a god or God, how would you go about, you know, here's a millions and billions of people on this Earth that you have to get a message to of a life that we're going to come and save you, that life exists after you. And how are you going to go about giving that message? How would you go about doing that? Would you buy a whole bunch of advertisement?
Go on TV.
Be a TV minister?
Whisper in each ear.
Do what?
They would whisper in each ear.
The angels?
Yeah.
That's what they're going to do? Whisper in each ear?
They do it now.
Yeah, they whisper
in
each ear.
Why not that way?
I don't know. I you know, would we be more willing again? How would you do it in a, you know, so you have to have every angel whispering in somebody's ear and they're going to have to believe what you're saying.
The thing is, if you're disposed to believe, you will believe. If you're not disposed to believe, you won't believe even the most spectacular event trying to prove that he's alive. So, yeah, I know they've whispered in my ear before, and I think that if you're predisposed to believe, you will listen.
What happens if you're not?
You're not going to go anyway.
So here we had a group of people, the Pharisees, who didn't believe. And actually the Sadducees didn't believe in a resurrection or life, an afterlife. So does what we actually believe affect what happens in the next life? Does it stop it?
Yes and no. Because we're not God, we can't say what is and isn't acceptable down here. So what your belief is, or how you believe, or what you believe, I think as long as you have the basic tenets of it, that you believe in something, that we would all go.
Something.
I'm not saying that.
That's the debate, God.
It's God.
It's
the
something.
Allah or whomever. It's because I can't believe that the higher power would allow a large portion of our population to not be saved simply because they believe differently than we do, that they believe in like Allah or whatever instead of our God.
Okay, I would tend to agree. I think there's just because you're a Buddhist or you're a Hindu, you're not automatically doomed to hell. That's I'm gonna say for sure. That I will agree with you.
And even if you don't believe, but you're a really good person, and you know your intent is always good, you don't throw them in the fire.
Well, there would be some denominational theology that would throw them in the fire. Works will not get you to heaven, they'll say.
You know, it can be like, and you look at them like, really?
And I have another question apart from that. I don't remember. What was special about the number 7?
7 is a spiritual number.
Why?
The original menorah had 3 on each side and 1 in the middle. It had 7. So you're talking about sacred geometry that
was 7 already?
Yes.
But there were 7 loaves of bread.
Yes.
And when they were done, there were 7 full baskets of bread. There
yes.
are 7 several times in this story.
So this is the second story that's in the Bible about feeding 5,000 and 4,000. There's a 5,000 and 4,000 story. And the first story that we talked about, there was 12 baskets filled up. So 12 is another spiritual number. There's 12 tribes. There's on it goes. 40 is another one. These are sacred numbers, sacred geometry that I'm not going to get into today. 33, and all these type of things. They all have meanings. So in the story, the 7 baskets and the 3 fish, or it says there's several fish, and even having bread and fish has a spiritual meaning. We have bread that we have on communion table. It reminds us of Jesus' body. And the fish sign was used for, in the beginning, a Christian. I don't know how far back that goes, the fish sign goes. Do you know how far it goes back?
Well,
it goes back quite a ways.
They draw half the fish, and if you were a Christian, you finish it off. The only Christian
knows that. Yeah.
You know,
it was a secret sign, so if you drew it on the... And then the other person would finish it. It's like the Star of David. The Star of David is not... I kind of get a little upset when people call it the Jewish star. It's really a Star of David. It's sacred geometry. You can get every shape possible that we have in this earth out of that star. Square, rectangular, circle, I mean, all kinds of different shapes. I did some drawings, and someday I would like to share them, but I haven't got around to doing that yet. The cross is in there. The cross of Andrew is in there. All these different shapes. So that's another symbol of sacred geometry. And it has very, very, very deep meaning. And it can go on. You have the circle, the tree of, what do they call it? Not the tree of life, where they have used circles. Flower of life. Yeah, the flower of life, where the circles have to be a certain circumference, and you draw them, and that's called the flower of life. And then you put rectangles in it. All this stuff is sacred geometry. So when you read numbers in the Bible, there's a sacredness behind that a lot more. Now, the original menorah had 7, but after most of the menorahs that you see now have 9, 4 on each side. Yeah, but there's a 9th one in the middle.
That's not counted.
Oh, that's not counted.
No, that's what you use to light the rest of the candles.
Oh, okay. Well, it still has 9 candles in it.
It does, yes. But
yes.
But not a part of the menorah. It's because you don't want to light it with. You want to light it with that candle.
Yeah, but that. Okay. The only point that I want to make with that came after the destruction of the temple.
Yeah.
And they found oil, a small flask of oil. And that burned for 8 days.
It was supposed to only last like 1 or 2 days.
Yeah.
And that's where we get the miracle of light.
Yeah. Right. And that's the ceremony of lights is not an official sanctioned Jewish traditional festival. That was added. So that's not the original. But all that has meaning. All that stuff has meaning. All this stuff has meaning. Even like you look at the Christmas tree and the Yule log and all this type of stuff, there's a lot of meaning that goes behind that. And it was all kind of poured into what we call Christmas. And I should probably do a little more of it as I move through this year. Maybe I'll do a little more of that. What do you think? I always say that Jesus, I think next message, I'm going to bring up the idea about what Jesus taught was an ingredient. If you've heard me say that phrase. And I think it was an ingredient to share around the world. No matter if you were a Hindu or a Buddhist or a Jewish person or a Roman, you could take what Jesus taught and put it into your life, and you would be a better Roman, you would be a better Hindu, you would be a better... It was called the Way. It was a leaven. That's what I'm going to talk about next Sunday, the new leaven. Jesus was a new leaven. It was a leaven and yeast is what you add into bread dough to rise it up and make it a lot more. And that's what Jesus was. And that's where I'm going to go next Sunday, right before Advent. So I really just wanted to introduce the idea of the question. Do we bargain with God? You know, do we say to God, okay, if you do this, if I do this, will you do this for me?
I
try not to do that.
Huh? I don't.
I'm afraid I won't be able to carry out what I bargain God with. But there's people who do.
I think there's a human tendency to do that.
I will always go to church from now on if you save me, heal me, right? Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
I gave my child's life, they dedicated their life to serving in the church, and that, you know, followed through on that.
But that's a...
This might be the exceptions to the rules.
Yeah. I would say that so even if we get what we want, do we end up believing again, or do we continue to test God? We say, well, okay, you did that for me, now do this for me. Now do this for me. And I think that's what we have a tendency to do. We're never quite satisfied with proof that God exists and there's another life. I think that's just part of human nature. Until we get there, then we can say, okay, yes, it's here. But it's about faith and hope, I think, and belief in something we can't necessarily see and feel. And I think that's really where eternal life is not in the physical matter, it's in the non-matter area, and we tend to put too much effort in all this physicalness. That's all we see is the physical things.
And we think that's real,
yes.
Right, where they do say heaven sometimes is more real than what we know is real.
Yes, I think when we get to our next life, we pass from this one, we'll look back on this one and we'll say, wow. That was just like a blink. Yeah. That's a kind of Eastern philosophy where it says that this life here is more like an illusion. So anybody have anything else they want to say? I'm going to conclude. I think I would ask you to join us as we begin to celebrate after next Sunday, the Advent season. And we're going to look at the question of what would we do to, if we were God, what would we do to alert humans that God exists? And what would it take for us to believe? I think that's really what the Christmas story is about. It's the beginning of God showing himself, whatever we call God, to humans. And we were supposed to believe. But I still think that even us as Christians, as I'm going to point out, we don't want to share Jesus in the way that we should. We want to say, okay, here's our walls. Come in that door and believe how we believe. And we want to own the rights, copyright to Jesus, rather than saying, we have no doors. Come and worship with us however you believe. I watched the movie Gandhi yesterday. And one, we all know who Gandhi was. He was a pacifist who led India to freedom against the British Empire. But he was asked what he was as far as, was he a Hindu or was he a Christian? He says, I'm a Hindu, I'm a Christian, I'm a Jew, I'm a Buddhist, I'm all of these things. And I think that's what Jesus is about. And I welcome to the Christmas season. Amen.
Faithful.